very much. Good morning, good afternoon to everyone on today's IRTPC call on Tuesday, the 29th of May. We have Hago de Falla, James Bladel, Mike O'Connor, Barbara Knight, Matt Serlin, Avery Doria, Michaela Nalon, Bob Mountain, Chris Chaplow, Simonetta Bataiga. From staff, we have Marika Konings, Glenda Saint-Géry, and myself, Gisela Gruber. Apologies noted from Alain Béranger, Kevin Erdman, and Paul Diaz. I hope I haven't left anyone off the roll call. We have Roy Dykes, who has just joined us on the ACU room as well, who will hopefully be joining us on the call. And Phil Corwin has just joined us on the call. If I could also please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, James.
Thank you, Gisela. Always a pleasure. And before we get started with our agenda, I noticed that there's some dialogue in the chat box that the operator is telling folks that the call starts several hours from now. So, Gisela, if you wouldn't mind, could you maybe check in with our operator and see what's going on there?
Yeah, because my operator had no problem.
Absolutely. It's Gisela here. James, I'll take care of it.
Thank you, Avery. It seems to be luck of the draw. It seems that there's someone who's new on the job and telling folks that they're very early for the call. So welcome, everyone. As Gisela mentioned, this is the IRTPC PDP conference call for May 29th. And but as is our tradition and custom, the first step is, does anyone have any updates or changes to their statements of interest? If so, please indicate by raising your hand. Okay, thank you. Seeing none, we'll move on to the next item, which is to review the agenda that is posted in the right-hand column of the Adobe screen, as well as was circulated by Marika to the mailing list yesterday. Any edits or changes or questions regarding our agenda? Okay, thank you. We'll consider that agenda adopted, and of course we'll change it as we go along if necessary. So today's call will be primarily to review the draft language of the recommendations that was circulated last week by Marika and some of the questions, comments, and responses that those generated on the mailing list. I don't know that we will resolve all of the issues, but I think it should be a goal to get through the three sets of recommendations for charter questions A, B, and C, and then if we have further discussion or if we can tell that we're starting to go deep dive into one of the topics, then I would recommend that we conserve our teleconference time as much as possible because we are starting to approach some important deadlines and take those conversations to the mailing list. And then hopefully by the end of this call, we will also be able to establish a deadline by which we would close off discussion on the mailing list. Now, I think it's a little early to declare any particular issue closed unless there's unanimous feeling that we should start winding down discussion on some of the less controversial points. But if that's the case, we should be working towards placeholders or questions where we can direct feedback in workshops or questions that we can specifically ask in our call for public comment. And I think that that's a good approach to identifying and labeling any gaps in our agreement or any areas where we still need more information or more feedback from other areas of the community. So let's go ahead and dive into the draft recommendations for charter question A. And I think, Marika, is this what we're currently looking at here? It says it's, I think it's coming from Bob. Was he the latest author of these edits?
Yes, this is Marika. Would you like me to just go through the document and you know, just highlight the changes that were made following the last discussion and as well the edits that were provided by Bob?
That would be good.
Sure. If you could tee us up, and then we'll take a cue for discussion, and we'll do that for each of the three documents that were passed around.
Okay, so this is Marika. So we had an initial version of this language up for review for the last meeting, and what I did in red is the track changes I made based on those discussions, and then there's also some other language that was sent by people to the mailing list or added it into the document. So starting at the top, the first change there is in the first bullet point there. updating the terms to reflect what we agreed on previous calls, that it should be prior registrant and new registrant instead of losing and gaining, and also adding here the notion that authorization could also be provided by the prior registrant in the form of a pre-approval or via proxy, which we also discussed at the last meeting. And you see a whole new section here going down on the same page that basically explains in more detail the discussion we had as well on the last call, whether there should be any restrictions following a change of registrant for having a change of registrar. And it basically outlines the two views where I think some members of the working group feel that there should be this 60-day restriction to change registrant, to change registrars after a change of registrant. And the other view that supports that there should not be such a restriction. On the first view, I've taken there, I think, language that was sent by Mikey to the mailing list outlining why he feels that there should be such a restriction, which I think was also supported by Michaela and I think others. So that I would encourage people that support that view to make sure that it reflects their views on why such a restriction should apply. And then on the other view, Bob has provided proposed wording on why he feels that such a restriction shouldn't apply. And again, there I would like to encourage people that are of the same view that there shouldn't be such a restriction to have a look at the language and see if that meets their views or whether there should be any further changes.
So okay, the idea being clarity, here, I'm sorry, just for clarity, the pro or the, I don't want to say pro. The first position is in red, and the second position is in blue. Is that correct?
Yes, correct, partly. The blue language has been added by Bob, and that's a rationale. The first part of that sentence is in red because I added that that sentence, but I left the next part open, basically asking Bob and Simonetta to provide wording there, I think as they were the most vocal on the last call on the position that there shouldn't be any restrictions.
Okay. Can we pause there for just a moment? Because we have a pretty good attendance on this call. And I wanted to do something, not a vote necessarily, because that's a forbidden topic here within ICANN PDP, but I'm trying to understand which of these positions is the majority and which is the minority, or if they're relatively, roughly, equally split. So can we say, for example, if you support, we're gonna put 60-day lock, I guess, is on the table, 60-day transfer prohibition, after a change of registrant. Can we have green tick marks if you approve of this or consider yourself supporting this, and red X's if you consider yourself opposed to this? And let's just get an idea of how this breaks down, because I really don't know which is which. I see we're kind of accumulating here. I don't know. We've got some greens and some reds. I mean, okay, and then is there anyone that is not that is on the call but is not currently on Adobe or not able to register their support or either?
Yes, Angie Graves, go green for me, thanks.
Green for you. Anyone else? Thank you, Angie, by the way.
Yeah, this is Phil. I'm having a computer issue and can't see the text at the moment. It should be fixed in a few minutes.
Okay, Phil, but in general, do you come down on the side of wanting to have that 60-day period where a domain name cannot transfer to a new registrar, or would you rather see that go away?
Let me think on it and weigh in once I'm logged in, okay?
Okay.
Thank you.
There's tick marks disappearing now. I think maybe that time's out. But it looks like we had about three or four red X's and maybe twice that, maybe eight green tick marks. So, okay. So, sorry, it was a count of 9-3. So I was just eyeballing it, but thank you. I was just trying to understand whether this was split down the middle. I honestly thought perhaps it would have been reversed, 9 red and 3 green. But I think it's just important to see what the general sentiment is as we go forward. And so I'll let you continue, Marika, but wanted to indicate that we need to direct commenters and workshop participants to this question in particular, because I think we need to start to get past this one. Thanks.
This is Rick, and I can just ask for clarification. Do you want me to note that in the report, basically saying that the the first view it seemed to be supported, you know, seemed to have strong support, while those that, you know, voiced significant opposition supported the alternate view? Or do you want to leave it as is, which is more just saying that there were two views that were put forward, and leave it more neutral for now?
I think definitely leave it more neutral if we include anything at all, because now we're starting to stray into consensus calls using chat rooms, and I know that some folks have some discomfort for that. And I see Avery's hand up, so hopefully she can provide us some guidance. Go ahead, Avery. Avery, you may be on mute.
Yeah, I think I respectfully disagree. I think it's important at this time to start capturing these things. They could change. So I think what you just did was kind of like a visual hum, and the way we find what the consensus point is by taking a guess at it. I think the guess that comes out of this meeting is there's strong support with significant opposition. Then you list the significant opposition. And also from reading Simonetta's notes, I think there's probably a third position that needs to be added as part of the opposition. Because also in doing that split, we just sort of said there's strong support for view number one, and then there are other views. We didn't then go through view by view, and that's fine. But it does look like Simonetta probably has another view. I think in an initial report, it's important to say that, you know, at current glance, we believe that there's strong support. You know, you can couch it in, but I think we have to start putting those things down now if we're going to get to a final report that has them, because we need to get people to say, yeah, I think that's right. No, I think you've got it wrong. And if we don't put them down, we don't get that. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Avery. And I think that is important that that we do characterize it as a strong consensus with significant opposition. I think that is the correct assessment, and that we can put that out there and then gauge the level of response. Simonetta has described or referred to a hybrid approach or one or the other approach. Perhaps, Simonetta, you know, you could describe that by offering some edits to this document, or is it further down and we maybe jump the gun on that one? That would be another question. But then I'll go to Michele, and then I wanted to turn it back over to Marika for continuation of the document. So, Michele, you're up.
Thanks, James. I'm going to do something very, very strange for me. I'm going to violently agree with Avery. I think it is very important that, you know, that we can't just send through some kind of report, even a draft report, saying some people like something, some people don't like something. That's like incredibly vague and totally useless. It's pretty obvious to me that, as Avery worded it, strong support with significant opposition in I Can't Speak would be the current state of play with regard to the two different options here. And I don't see why that's an issue, why we can't put that into a draft report. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Michele. And with that, let's move on then to the remainder of the document. But I do agree that it was fairly... I'm going to defer to Michele and Avery and say that we should, Marika, include that statement or that characterization of the level of support for this proposal. Can we then move on to the next part following? I think it's as a result of these deliberations. Is that the next section?
Yeah, this is Marika. And just to note that, you know, there's still one sentence there as well after this section that specifically calls for public input on the two different views, you know, to help inform deliberations going forward. And I'll indeed clarify then the two, you know, the support that was there, and hopefully it will help people as well then to provide their input. Then there's some other small changes to the different steps, basically just updating the prior and new registrant. And then on step five, I've made there, as you know, we haven't had a final agreement on that yet either, even though there is, you know, strong support, significant opposition. I added there the possible step five, and then between brackets, as outlined above, the working group has not decided yet whether this step should be required or not. maybe I can Shuchita has not taken a final decision yet, you know, whether this should be required or not, just to indicate that this is still under discussion. Then moving on to the notes, there's actually still an element highlighted there in yellow, basically noting that a change of registrant is defined as an update to any of the following: a primary contact email, name, organization, and there's between brackets make email required per a Rob Golding email. I think that's a note that was added by Mikey. I don't know if that's still needed in highlight or if that's still something needing confirmation from the working group at this stage, or as there haven't been any comments, people are happy to leave it as is and just take away the bracketed language.
Well, let's circle back to that, because I think that that is important, but I want to make sure that we're not being too restrictive with that. So I did have one question. Where will these notes go in the draft report, or are they being discarded, or will they be preserved somehow?
This is Rick. The idea is that these pages are just inserted as is on the section of the recommendation, so that the notes are part of the outline procedure, so as it gives some further insight to the working group thinking. That was at least my idea behind this document, so it really would be inserted together with the process and, you know, followed then by the you know, the different sections there. So it's basically a cut and paste idea of this document into the initial report.
Okay. I'm thinking that perhaps the notes should be attached to that area, but we can discuss formatting later. I don't want to take up our time on that today, but okay, so for this one, I think is Rob is not currently on the call. Mikey, would you? I think Marika attached your name to this, rightly or wrongly. Do you have any kind of context you can provide here, sir?
This is Mikey for the transcript. I was using several emails as the basis of this, and in the case of Rob's, the outline that you see in front of you pretty much tracks with what he said in the email, with one suggestion, and that's the one that I highlighted. I wasn't sure about that one, so I called it out and put it in yellow so that we could discuss that more broadly. It would be probably helpful to have Rob on the call for that part of the discussion, because I didn't know quite what he meant, and so I haven't got a whole lot to add, except that for the most part this aligns pretty much with what he was suggesting, and this is the one exception.
Okay. Thanks, Mikey. I raised my hand to offer something from our perspective as a registrar. GoDaddy is probably notorious or infamous, however you want to look at it, for being one of the more sensitive registrars to changes of registrar information and what we consider just an update of routine, update of who is information versus what we consider to be a reassignment of the domain name registration. We do not include the email address. We recognize that people will occasionally change email addresses, or that in some activity unrelated to to a change of registrant, for example, if there was a transfer or something along those lines where someone would just have occasion to go and review their registrant data, that they might notice that an email address listed in their WHOIS data without a date and make a change, and then we wouldn't want them to inadvertently block transfer of that domain name through that method. So I'm coming down as a representative of a very, what I would consider, strict registrar. I'm coming down in the position that the changes should be triggered by, change of registrar should be triggered by name and organization, but not one of the contact methods such as email, telephone. But that's just my opinion on this. Okay. Can you continue with the remainder of the notes, Marika?
Yes, it is, Marika. Can you then just confirm what we do with the yellow language? Can we just take that out for now, or should we make a note that that's still under discussion, or further details under discussion? Or
I think I would like to see it taken out. Any strong opponents to that? in ICANN world, silence is agreement. So or silence is often taken as agreement. So anyone believe that it feel very passionately that it needs to be included, that a change to an email is considered a change in registrants? Yeah, I see. Okay, McKelly, go ahead.
How do I answer this? I'm currently writing a rather large rant about registrant validation and verification, and of course, email is one of those is one of the areas that causes me the most one of the largest headaches. What is the actual wording at present, James? Just for my
I don't know that we have any wording. It's we're defining what a change of registrant is, and we're saying that it's a new entry in the fields of name, organization, and the proposal on the table is a new entry for the primary contact method, which would be a requirement for email, I believe. I'm paraphrasing, but I think that the idea is which fields and who is should trigger this discussion of, yep, now we're talking about a change of registrant.
Right. Well, okay. The thing I would say is this. I mean, this. I don't know how to actually word this sanely, but I'll try. Most of the registries I deal with, both in, and by registries I mean primarily CCTLDs, have a clearly defined concept of a domain holder, and you know which, and they have obviously a very clearly defined concept of a changer holder. But as we're discussing, and I am supportive of the idea of locking down domains when there is a change of registrant, I'm very, very wary of explicitly including the email field as an identifier of a registrant. However, I'm also very conscious of the fact that the email field, in many respects, is possibly the only bit of data that you can actually rely on. So I'm quite conflicted. Thanks.
Well, McKelly, maybe I can help. In my thinking, and I'm speaking just a personal capacity, in my thinking, if the email is invalid to begin with, it's going to be invalid anyway. This is not necessarily an accuracy issue. This is a change. So if someone comes in and changes the email, whether to make it more accurate, one could assume, does that mean that they have, you know, reassigned the name? So I don't know that the accuracy or validity of the email is necessarily on the table with this discussion. But that's just my feeling. I'll go to Jonathan next.
Yeah, this is Jonathan here, and you know, I think Mikey just made a comment in the chat saying this is something that probably needs a little bit more thought. But I do think, and I agree with that, but just to kind of throw my two cents in, I think when the email by itself changes, and I agree with a lot of what Michaela said too. I mean, there are definitely concerns, you know, when an email changes, and you know, it being such a key piece of the registrant's contact information. But when the email address by itself changes without changing any of the other contact or registrant information, I'd think that you'd be pretty hard pressed to say that in and to itself is a change of control, because if none of the other registrant information is changing, and it's just the email, I mean, really, then it's just the contact. You know, it's solely the contact information by itself at that point. You know, I just don't see how that becomes a change of control if the rest of the registrant information is staying the same. I mean, if it's a company that owns the domain and it's a different contact, but at the same time, it's still the same registrant that is, you know, it's the same registrant. So I don't think, again, you know, my two cents just in this, you know, limited context is just that when the email address is by itself changing, although it could be a marker of, you know, of fraud and some of the other things, I think just for the purpose of defining or identifying it as a change of control, I don't think the email changing by itself qualifies. Now, whether or not that changes, you know, whether a registrar or if a registrar wants to have other safeguards in place, you know, to prevent, the transfer because it's evidence of fraud when an email changes and you know, part of some, you know, some other transfer, you know, part of the transfer. I mean, that is sort of a separate issue. But I think just as far as defining change of control, email by itself changing, I don't think necessarily qualifies by itself. So it's just my two cents.
Okay, thanks, Jonathan. Marika, do you want to weigh in on this and then move us through the list, please?
Yeah, this is Marika, just to make a suggestion on maybe how to move forward on this. Maybe what we could do is take out it as a bullet point, but just note underneath it something like, you know, the working group is still considering whether a change of primary contact method on itself or possibly in combination with other changes should also be considered a change of registrant and is welcoming input on that, something like that.
Yes, I agree, and I think that captures the flavor of Rob's comments from Rob and others, and it but it still kind of establishes the support for the default position. So I think that's good.
Okay, I'll suggest some language there, and people can have a look at them then. So moving then further down the list, they're still here as well. Another one, the separate policy or part of the IRTP on page 4. Again, a question here if we want to include or do a little poll on what people prefer so we can actually include where the working group is currently leaning, whether it's, you know, that this should be a separate policy, whether it should be a combined policy with the IRTP, or whether this should be some kind of hybrid where, you know, you would have an overall transfer and change of registrant policy where, you know, one leg would be the existing IRTP and the other part would be you know, the change of registrant function. So I don't know if we want to do a, you know, quick show of hands on that one so we can just note that, or whether people...
Well, I think in this particular case it's a little more difficult to gauge consensus. I'm looking to Aubrey for help as well, because we have three choices as opposed to a binary choice. And also, I believe that this was one of the questions explicitly asked in our survey. So perhaps I would propose to the group that we go back and take a look at the responses of the survey and then try to put some narrative around that as a sentence rather than conduct a very complex and possibly lengthy lengthy test here. Aubrey, what are your thoughts on that approach? Because I believe this is an identical mirroring of a question that was asked on our existing survey.
Okay. Yeah, I think that at the end of the survey, hi, this is Aubrey. I think at the end of the survey, and I don't have it in front of me now, you and I and Marika had talked, and we had come up with a, you know, one of the I can't ease rubrics to apply to that. I don't remember it offhand. I'm not looking at the results at the moment. So what I would suggest that we do is that we put that out on the list once one of us discovers it again or looks at the results and see if we get any pushback from people for the use of that phraseology, and if not, put that in there as the approximation at the time of the initial report.
And this
okay.
is Marika. I'm actually looking at the survey results, and they're not very helpful because actually it was split between change of control should be a new consensus policy and the other half saying it should be in addition to the existing IRTP consensus policy. So maybe we should just know that, you know, there was support for the different views and leave
yeah.
it
yeah.
vague.
At I think that's a good characterization.
So then moving on... the other open item is the level of consensus for this recommendation, and you know, we have some notions I think in between, but you know, option is here there. If we don't, you know, we don't have a final recommendation yet, so I guess it's hard to say this is a, you know, a final level of consensus. But the working group, you know, might want to say based on discussions to date, this is a, you know, the preliminary sense of consensus. A final determination will be made, you know, once we've reviewed the public comments and have finalized these recommendations, and will be included in the final report.
Okay, thank you. Any final inputs here on what we reviewed from this call for charter question A? Any parting thoughts? We'd like to cover B and C in the next 30 minutes or less, so I see the queue is clear. Oh, there's Mikey. Can we have a quick thought, Mikey?
I'll struggle with that. This is Mikey. I just want to circle back to the notion that Simonetta raised as maybe trying to struggle a little more to find a middle ground between the two, not on this call, but between now and Prague. I do think that there is some middle ground where the default can be 60 days, but there are mechanisms whereby registrants who want to waive that condition, waive that policy, could do so. And maybe there's a way out of the logjam with that. So that's
the
parting thought.
Okay. Ken, I ask that you and Simonetta and anyone who's interested, and I would be interested as well, circulate or start a thread on a mailing list, and we can start to draft some language. It may not make it necessarily into this version, depending on timing, but it will definitely be on the table for discussion in Prague and beyond.
Sure. Happy to do that.
Thanks, Mike. And I note that Simonetta also wants us to refer back to some of the comments and contributions made by Phil, so let's make sure that we capture that and it isn't lost from the chat. And thank you, Simonetta and Phil. Can we then move on to the draft recommendations for Charter Question B? And I am naively optimistic that this one will be shorter, but it's possible that we'll actually spend the same amount of time here or even more. This is a question about time limiting the FOA, form of authorization. Marika, can you tee us up, and then we'll open a queue for discussion.
Yeah, this is Marika. What I basically did, because for the last meeting, the recommendations for B and C were in one document, so I basically took them apart and added, you know, the different sections on, you know, level of consensus and impact, and then suggested some wording there. So for this recommendation, what I added is an introduction on the form of authorization, because we had a discussion again at the last meeting, you know, what is actually a form of authorization versus the auth info code. So I took there the language, I think, that was suggested by Barbara, and I think as well by Paul, in here, to have an explanation of that, and also added as an annex the standardized FOA that will be included as a separate part. Then I also, what we discussed on the last call, separate out the findings from the actual recommendation. So the part that the language above suggested is then here first as the findings. I added there as well, that was suggested on the last call, to call out the fact that the expected scope of effort involved in time-limiting FOAs was considered minimal to some. Some suggested that that was missing. And then you have the proposed recommendation there that follows, different email conversations, I think language suggested by Mikey as well as James. And I think that the only outstanding item on the specific recommendation is if people are happy with the language as is, there was a suggestion whether the time for which an FOA would be valid would either be 45 or 60 days. I don't know if that was an open question that was going to be put out for public comment, or whether the working group wanted to choose at this meeting, or make a suggestion for either 45 or 60 days to make it more definitive in the report itself.
Okay, thank you, Marika. All right, folks, if we could keep this to about a 10-minute discussion. First up, I'd like to, using the green and red marks, can we gauge the level of support for the draft recommendation, which is currently labeled 2.1.4? Once obtained, a form of authorization is valid for some period of time. Let's leave the question of whether it's 45 or 60 off the table for a moment. Or until the domain name expires, or until there is a change of registrant, whichever occurs first. What is the general level of support for that statement? I see some green ticks appearing, but Bob, you have a question?
Yeah, this is Bob for the transcript. I think, James, the agreement on that is, at least for me, contingent on the following verbiage as well. So is that, I guess, a question, is that 2.1.4 alone, or is that, in the context of the rest of the changes that are also made?
I think that is in conjunction with the working group further recommends. I think that we would assume that those are coupled together.
Okay, yeah, in that case, I would agree. Thank you.
Yeah, and this is Regan. I'm probably in that case, the blue language should actually move up one level, so it's clearly together with the recommendation, and then the appreciate input can then follow underneath that.
And I see both, I see red and green changing into hand raises. Can we? Well, so maybe this is maybe this was kind of a futile exercise. Go ahead, Mikey.
This is Mikey. I am not violently opposed to Bob's new language there, but I think it needs refinement. I like Phil's concept better, that we say registrants can opt out if they are more sophisticated and are concerned about negative effect on liquidity. The problem with this particular language is that I could see a pre-authorized sale leading to a hijack. And so I'm not throwing my body on the tracks on this one. I'm just not ready to sign off on this language quite yet. So maybe what we do, at least in terms of my comment here, is we add this to the pile of the email thread that we're going to start, because I'm not adverse to the idea, but I'm quite concerned about possible security breaches.
Thanks, Mikey. And my support for these combined recommendations is predicated on, or at least acknowledges that that language in blue is probably a work in progress. But I think it's a general concept that I think is on the table from Bob and from Phil's comments, I think. Yeah. So go ahead, Simonetta.
Yeah, I had to unmute myself first to find the right button. I just wanted to also leave a comment for the transcript and say that I agree with Bob that it's kind of hard for me to say just like blanket, yes, I like this versus blanket, no, I don't. But I would agree that I like this recommendation as a combined effort. I would not want to support and say that I'm in favor of this recommendation if it doesn't have this idea in there that someone who would like to give their FOA ahead of time and for auto-renewal, whatever period of time that he feels basically could be indefinitely. I think that idea is really important to me in this recommendation, and so I wouldn't want to support this if that were not the case. But I understand that this is not what we're talking about. Secondly, I'm not so sure with this question of do you support or don't you support if it's always just that black and white. So if there's only a yes or no response to the question, then you get a lot of green or red check marks. But maybe sometimes people have questions or have comments about these, and it would be nice to capture these as well.
Certainly, and that's kind of the point. Just to explain, that's kind of the point of gauging at least the rough or preliminary level of consensus so that we can understand whether or not we need to suss out those further questions or those further comments or whether an issue is starting to take shape. I think, though, there's always the danger in ICANN circles or in these consensus-type organizations that we'll get a bunch of very, very bright folks together and debate and deliberate these issues indefinitely. But at a certain point, we do... uncomfortable that may seem or feel, we do have to start boxing ourselves into decisions, yes or no, right or left, black or white, only because that's the nature of the final work product that we're expected to deliver back to the community. So let's take a further look at this. I think that the blue item is interesting. I'm starting now after reading some of the chat windows, and I'm trying to think maybe it is important. Maybe it doesn't necessarily address the FOA time limiting issue, but it addresses maybe perhaps a larger concern about revocability of authorization, which maybe we need to leave it open. I would suggest, and I would look to Aubrey to respond, that this is, again, a level of rough consensus with significant minority, but we have to finish. I think there's a lot of work in progress here relative to the language of the blue and how strongly it is handcuffed to the recommendation in red. Simonetta, is that an old hand, or is that, do you have a new question?
No hand.
Okay, go ahead.
So on the question of the security topic, I really it almost is the exact same line of reasoning that we looked at under the charter question A. Aspect of the 60-day lock, where my point of view is that, yes, for some people who might not be that sophisticated when it comes to trading domain names, they need further protections, and for these people, things should be in place, like, okay, someone would have to tell their registrar, for example, that, yes, they are waiving this FOA expiring within 5 days or something. But if someone chose to do that, regardless of whether or not sophisticated or not, like just the mere fact that they actually deliberately chose that option, I think would be one way to think about this. And then, yes, if that hijacking situation happens, then it may happen, let's face it. I mean, there's no such thing as complete security around things that you do online. But then there's also what we put in place with IRTP Part B, and that part should help in those cases. So I think all of these things are connected, and it's not that one has to make a blanket rule of it can only be one thing and there's no exception to it, because the blue language in here points to a compromise, and that is something that can be done too.
Okay, thank you, Simonetta. Aubrey?
Yeah. Thanks.
Aubrey?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Your voice is, you've been very faint on the audio. Is it possible you could, go ahead and shout at us, I guess.
I'll shout. I never know when my microphone is working well or not. I would think that actually on 214, we had a rough consensus on it, but you have two subjects that are broken away that still have, I think, pretty much mixed support, which is the one of how long, 45, 60, longer, and then this last question that Bob brought in. So I think that in a sense it would be good, the way I've been listening and seeing, is to indicate that there is rough consensus on the FOA having a limited lifetime, but that there are various concerns and there's various mixed views on length of time and other constraints, such as, and I think that, at least that's what I think I'm hearing.
I agree, Aubrey, and I think that's a good synopsis of what Marika should be pursuing for the language in this section, which is that there is rough consensus for the idea that an FOA should be time-limited. However, there remain a few open questions or implications, such as the length of time and this question of whether or not an FOA can be pre-authorized to renew or automatically renew at the end of that time frame, which, or perhaps, we capturing the bit in blue about eliminating the ability for the prior registrant to cancel a transfer. So, I think that. I think that if we can capture that, we can go forward with that. And I think that here, where we say prior registrant, that's confusing because that refers to the change of control process, whereas this FOA, in my understanding, is specific to the existing inter-registrar transfer, but I'm willing to admit that I'm wrong or misreading that, so we should probably take a look at that. Bob, can you bring us in for a landing on this one, and we can touch on charter question C before the end, sir?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I'm not as experienced as James and Aubrey on this, but I just want to make sure that the rough consensus on 214, from my standpoint, is intimately linked with the ability to qualify that and to offer an option to extend, have an extended time limit or a auto renew. So, the kind of, I thought what I was hearing was there was some concern, but with me it would be an extremely high level of concern on the time limiting FOA without those other things. So I just want to make sure, certainly from my standpoint, that's it's not a some concern. It's a very high level of concern.
Yeah, Bob, I think that's correct, and I think we have to assume that for folks who have concerns about either the time limit or the linking of this issue of blue, it's possible that if their concerns are not met on one or the other or both of those issues, that their concern or their support for 214 melts away. And so I guess what we're saying is everybody's support is contingent at this point on some blanks that need to be filled in. Does that accurately capture what we're talking about?
Yeah, I think so, yes.
Okay. So I think we kind of all arrived at that, which may or may not be helpful.
This is Aubrey again. If I can jump in, I didn't get my hand up. I think that's a part of rough consensus, is that people understand, and I think you'll probably find among some of those in the rough consensus that support it, if the time period gets too long or if the automatic renewal is too easy, too ongoing, too evergreen, that could force people that liked it to sort of say, well, they don't like it anymore. So I think you have to be, it's a rough consensus, and these are open issues related to that, I think, holds.
Absolutely agree. So, Marika, is that helpful at all?
Yeah, this is Rick. I think I can work with that. I can write something that, this is a rough consensus recommendation, but, support may be contingent on resolving, the following two issues or three or whatever comes out that the working group is looking for specific input on, and, a final determination will be made, following review of public comments for the final report. So I think I can work with that. And as I said, people should feel free then as well, if once I have suggested language, to make further edits or changes if they're not comfortable, whatever language I put forward.
Thank you very much, Marika, and thanks, group. I think that's a good way of going forward into the draft report. I'm just naive enough to think that we can tackle Charter Question C and the draft recommendations for that, realizing that we're 9 minutes from the top of the hour and some folks may have a hard stop, but if you can spare an extra 5 to 7 minutes, I think we would all appreciate if we can at least get this, drive this home to the finish line. So, Marika, if you would please set us up here, and then we will take some questions.
Yeah, this is Marika. So, indeed, what I've done here is separate out the findings and the recommendation. So, Bob made some small suggestions here to clarify the wording, but I would just like to point to an email that Barbara has sent to the mailing list just prior to this call, and I've pasted that language on the right side of the screen. Where I think she's basically suggested a reformulation of the recommendation to clarify some concerns. And just to note as well, I've noted some expected impact of the proposed recommendations, and if people have any suggestions on anything else that needs to be added there, that would be appreciated. But maybe Barbara can explain the changes she's proposing and see if that's something the working group can agree with.
Thank you, Marika. And I think we should probably just, true to form, test this this draft recommendation. But before that, Barbara, do you have any thoughts, concerns, or additions to this language before we throw it out onto the table and let folks poke at it?
No, this is Barbara for the transcript. I don't really have anything to add, and I wish I could take credit for it, but Paul actually drafted the language, and I thought he had done a pretty good job of it. So I don't really have anything to add, but I'm happy to answer any questions relative to, I guess, the thoughts behind it, should anyone have them.
Thanks, Barbara, and thanks, Paul, in absentia. Roy, good to see you, sir. Could you please give us your thoughts?
Yeah, the only thing I wanted to do was, and I haven't been able to do this yet, is get an assessment on that language from what it means to our engineering group. And the other thing is, there's another registry that also uses proprietary IDs, and I asked them for input on the language and haven't heard back yet. So it's not that I want to respond in consensus with them, but I would want their thoughts as to the approach and if the language, if there's suggestions or thoughts about possibly tweaking the language. So I'm kind of in a holding pattern right now with those two entities. Me personally, I think it's okay, but I did want to check with those other parties.
Okay, thank you, Roy, for clarifying. And I think that when we gauge level of consensus, we're all kind of shooting from the hip a little bit in our personal capacity, not speaking for constituency, and recognizing that we have to take some of these things back internally and turn them over as well. At least that's certainly the case for registrars. And I assume that applies to registries and other stakeholders as well. So let's take a look at this draft recommendation, folks. And once again, using the green check marks or the red X's, indicate your support for the language as it stands with the inclusion of the blue underlined section and blue, I guess the blue or section as well, and see if we can determine where the group comes down on this question.
James, just to clarify, are we now talking on the language that's in the document itself or the new suggested language by Barbara, which is on the right hand? That's not what is on the screen. That's the old
version. I'm sorry. That was not clear. Okay, everyone, please clear your tick marks. And Marika, what is the material difference between, I'm doing it right to left. I thought they were the same, so I'm sorry on that one.
No. I'm sorry, as the language just came in before the call, I didn't have time to update the document. So what you see on the middle part, that's the original language as suggested by Bob, who made a couple of small edits just to clarify. And on the right-hand side, underneath the agenda, you see the recommendation as updated by Barbara. And I think that's what people were discussing.
Okay.
And
the primary difference between the two is, Barbara, can you help me here. What is the primary difference between your language and the language that's on the document?
Okay, so basically what it does is it, as opposed to just addressing the new registries standardized on IAN IDs, it basically says that all all GTLD registries would be required to add the registrar of records IAN ID and the thick who is. So it ends up becoming, I guess, you know, I think it's a little bit better because, you know, you now have existing registries that are now also making the IAN ID available versus, I believe, the old language allowed them to use the proprietary IDs but then have the option of switching to the new IAN ID.
Okay, thank you. I think that makes a lot more sense now. So the primary difference is that even if an existing registry chooses to exercise their options as to be grandfathered, they would still have to display the registrar's IANA ID somewhere in the thick whois data. Is that a correct assessment or synopsis of your language?
It is. And again, you know, there could be, you know, some, as Roy was saying, there could be some development requirements. So the timing of when they would be able to implement that, obviously, we would have to take into consideration. But I think that it would give the registrars, I guess, what they're looking for in having the IAN IDs being more readily available.
Okay, thank you. One final question, Barbara, Roy. There was another sentence there at the end of the draft language about reviewing this in the 24-month period and reconsidering whether that grandfather clause was still, or whether this entire requirement was still useful. Was that intentionally removed from your draft, Barbara, or was that something? Was that just an artifact?
Well, I placed this as Barbara for the transcript. I had indicated in the email that I'd sent out to the list earlier this morning that I'm not certain revisiting it in 24 months anything really would have changed, because I think that, you know, to the extent that registries, that are currently supporting TLDs that don't necessarily require registrars to be ICANN accredited would still have to have some way of identifying those registrars within their systems. So I think there's always going to be a place for proprietary IDs. And I don't know that this policy really should dictate whether or not a registry can or cannot use a proprietary ID, so long as, you know, they are currently using or would be using the IN ID for those that for those TLDs that do require a registrar to be ICANN accredited.
Okay, so I'm going to go to Aubrey here in just a minute, but just so we're comparing apples to apples, Marika, I'm going to ask that we remove, or that we, everyone in the group, please imagine that we have removed the last sentence from the draft that's in the main window that says, finally, the working group recommends. Because that may, even if that is retained in the report, it may not be part of the language of the recommendation, but more of a, you know, more of a follow-up type of a language. So with that, Aubrey, can you
First, I want to agree with you on that last sentence, because it would need to be isolated off in any case, because what mechanism are we talking about for reviewing it? And I think that's a whole other thing. On Barbara's question itself, I think I get confused reading it, because first of all, it says that all new ones are required to register to publish it. Now, then I see the second sentence saying that all old ones would be required to publish it. In neither case, it seems the only thing that adding that language seems to do is to restrict new GTLD registries from also publishing a proprietary one, because we have two sentences saying these guys publish it, and then the second sentence guys says these guys publish it, but they're also publishing their proprietary one. Now, I don't know, but I can imagine situations where we have an existing non-GTLD registry, such as the CCTLD registry, who uses a proprietary and would really like to be under the regulation of being able to publish both its proprietary and the IANA. So I really don't understand what the second sentence adds other than the ability to continue to use a proprietary should you wish to. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. I think that's an important point, because really what it's the net effect of the recommendation as written by Barbara is it's really a prohibition on new GTLDs from developing or publishing proprietary IDs, if I'm understanding or stating that correctly, Aubrey.
That's the way it reads to me. Both of them say you got to use the IANA, but one group of people can also continue to use proprietary.
Okay. Okay, so I'm trying to think of how we can clean this up so we have something that we can, you know, put out to for a test. Let's take a look at it this way, Barbara. Let's go back to the original language. Let's strip out the last sentence, which I think, as Aubrey and others have indicated, is probably better considered as a secondary issue. Let's take a test on that question in the main, in the language in the main body of the Adobe chat room, and then let's consider the addition of this requirement that Barbara's proposed as an open question, along with the open question of whether or not this should be reviewed in some future period of time. So, Marika, can you help me here with the language of recommendation charter question C from that beginning through to the end of or continue to use their proprietary IDs? Can we get some gauge of level using the green check marks or the red X's of whether or not folks would support that draft language, recognizing that there are now two open questions? Yeah, and I think Mikey has summed it up very well in the chat. I'm the only one that understands what we're voting on. Go ahead, Roy.
James, I'm going to abstain for the moment on this one, given my comments from earlier.
Fair enough, and understood. And it looks like I've got a couple of other folks that want to sit this one out. Matt's supporting. Okay, so Marika, can I ask that we copy and paste into the chat the draft language of the recommendation minus the last sentence, please.
With
or
with
into
Bob's
the agenda
option?
Or
with Bob's change?
No, without.
Oh, without Bob's change.
Without Bob's change and without Barbara's additional change.
Okay. That's what I wasn't clear on.
Extracting all of the, what I guess what we're saying is the new questions or the contingent questions.
I think the only edits that Bob made were just to clarify the language. I don't think he made any substantial.
The blue text is not material. Okay, here it comes, folks. It's on the chat window on the other side here. That is the language that we're discussing, which essentially says new registries have to use IANA IDs. Existing registries can opt out. The question of whether or not they should adopt it at some future day, or we should review it, or all those other things that were added need to be separated. Still, no one is voting. Myself and Aubrey, any other level of support here? We've got a couple of folks who have abstained. McKelly, is that clear? You're asking what you're voting on, Bob. You said you were confused. Go ahead, Bob.
Oh, sorry. This is Bob. I may just need a little bit more time to understand this, but it looked to me like Barbara's point was around thick who is, and I'm not sure how that does or doesn't interact with the original recommendation, which was that they're using the proprietary IDs with the option to switch to IANA. So I guess I'm just confused on how that the thick who is plays into that, because that's a term that I just didn't consider on the original wording. So I guess just to summarize, I'm just confused. I just need to understand how that plays into it, and then I would be able to vote one way or the other.
Okay, so I see a queue building up here. We're 5 minutes past the hour. I think there's still a lot of confusion, so I'm going to declare my attempt to gauge consensus on this a failure. And I'll just go ahead and take this issue to the list. Marika, maybe you can help me draft some options, ABC, chocolate, vanilla, strawberry, and then we can at least get this maybe hashed out on the list a little bit better before we can gauge the level of consensus. Does that sound fair, everyone?
Yeah, and this is Marika, if I can make maybe a suggestion, because it seems that people don't have any strong objections to the language suggestions by Barbara, as long as it clarifies that this does not prevent new GTLD registries to use proprietary IDs, as long as they also publish the IANA IDs. That's what I got a bit from the comments, and I think as well the comments in the chat. So maybe just a question of clarifying that language in Barbara's recommendation, if I got that right.
Okay, so I see Michele and Roy, and I don't mean to be rude, gentlemen, but I think that we should probably close this off for now. But we will take this particular issue to the list and see if we can't clean it up into something that is at least more intuitively understood. So with that, I thank everyone who was able to stay a few minutes past our cutoff. Michele, did you have a closing thought, or is this still about chart question C? I think McKelly's on mute. Yeah. Okay, so with that, we will probably also be starting a thread. Marika and I need to get some times and dates nailed down as well so that we can establish some deadlines for submission. Of course, we weren't able to get through everything today, so today can't be the deadline. But perhaps we could clarify that what we want to hit by our next call, and then how that's going to impact our intentions for Prague and beyond. So, thank you. I think we made some good progress.
James.
Yes, Marika. Go ahead.
Can I just clarify something? Are we still aiming to publish by the Prague deadline, or I know we still have some open issues that we're trying to resolve on the list, or what's that? Because the deadline for publication is Friday. So it doesn't require commitment from people to review language. I can send out updated drafts later today on all the recommendations that we discussed.
I'll have to check with Mikey and Simonetta, because there's a couple of things that they want to propose as well. Mikey and Simonetta, can that happen quickly? Do you think Friday's on the table? I think we can get this recommendation for language for question C wrapped up by then, but I just think that we should still be pushing, as Ari noted, we should still be pushing for Friday as our finish line. Mikey, is that something that I see Simonetta has left a call, so are you willing to get that thread started? And, okay.
I'm willing to give it a go. I'm going to drop off the net on Thursday for a 4-day weekend of drinking and carousing, so I'll be done before then no matter what. So Friday's fine.
Okay, fair enough. And
I did take note of some of the discussions that Simonetta and Mikey were having, so I'm also happy to already in the updated draft make some suggestions saying this was a third option that's also on the table, as a possible compromise option. So the opt-out, I think that was suggested by Bill.
Marika, do you want to take a crack at that before Simonetta and I do, or do you want, if you wanted to do that, that would be hugely helpful.
Yeah, I'm happy to do so. And as I said, I'm planning to get all of this out, later in my day. So hopefully that should give you sufficient time to turn it around by tomorrow for people to review before you go off on your drinking weekend.
Okay, cool. Thanks, Mikey. Thanks, Simonetta. Thanks, Marika. And Aubrey and Marika and I will continue to wrap up these last items for the Friday deadline. So thanks, everyone, for staying a little later, and we'll chat next week.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Thanks, James.
Bye.
Thanks, Andy, gang. Bye-bye.